Our founders, Ken and Mary, take us on a journey through the 12 steps, part 4, in progress.
And areas where our boundaries and others need strengthening. At the end of the day, and with our journal in hand, we take time for reflection. Some of us say a short prayer asking God to reveal everything we should know about ourselves from this day. With gratitude, we review the events from the past 24 hours. Though this step is intended to focus on our wrongs, we find it helpful to give some attention to our assets and accomplishments in growth and recovery as well. We determine what amends we need to make and the most appropriate ways to accomplish this. We remember to include any amends to God and ourselves. If we're unsure of the healthiest way to approach a situation, we share the circumstances with our sponsor and recovery friends. Promptness is very important in completing this step. We develop an instinctive sense of when to set boundaries with others. With boundaries in place, we are less likely to passively or aggressively react to others, take on others' feelings, attitudes, or realities, or give away our own sense of self. Or I could just leave it at that with that reading. So one of the things that stood out when going through that is that some of our habits are ingrained. And so, again, I think I was talking about this previously with the 6th and 7th step, but everything is progress, not perfection. And so there's some of those parts of us that as we're, being intentional around trying to change some of our codependent behaviors into something that's healthy, that it's important to know that some of those habits are ingrained. If we, what I found for myself is like the patterns that I learned earliest on are the toughest ones to let go of. And so they can, if I get too tired, I remember hearing about HALT in AA, but too hungry, too angry, too lonely, too tired, that at those times my boundaries are going to be the weakest. At those times, if I'm going to go into my codependence, that's when it's going to happen the strongest. And so being aware of that and, again, being able to have some compassion with ourselves and some understanding with ourselves. The phrase, our goal, however, is to make consistent progress. Again, progress, not perfection, I think is always important to recognize in this. So part of with this step as well is that it really strengthens, again, that inner self-parent, so that self-parent is the one who will sit down with pen to paper and start journaling at the end of the day, or just get quiet and check in with myself, taking that personal inventory, being able to see both those areas where we it either harmed ourselves or others, or also seeing those areas that, hey, I got into this situation today and I used this tool and I felt really good about myself. And so built up some self-esteem and being able to, look at the assets as well in our step 10. When I'm doing my step 10, so I focus on, I mentioned these 5 areas. I think Ken had mentioned the 5 areas as well. Of physical, emotional, sexual, spiritual, and intellectual. So when I am doing my daily inventories, I check in with each one of those areas. It's like, how did I show up for myself or others if the case is, you know, physically, you know, was there any areas in that, you know, that I was harmful to myself or others? So one of my things that I have to really watch with my self is that I don't work too much. So I'm pretty good at doing self-care around that and really pacing things out and not taking on too many commitments. But that's one area that I have to be aware of because it's that's going to be the easiest one for me to kind of fall into. So, but that can also be, so we just moved in our home in June. And so lots to do in that. And lots of unpacking and organizing and all of that kind of thing. I have to be aware that I am not harming myself physically in that area. And so I will share with you a recent thing that happened that I did harm myself physically. But Ken was gone. And so I decided I was going to pick some things up that were a little heavier than what I needed to be picking up. And I have one of my knees that is always a little bit weak. Well, now I've got a brace on that knee and I'm having to do some treatment on it because I somehow twisted it when I was picking things up. So I had shared with somebody I know in recovery that the universe was telling me to slow down a little bit, you know. And, but I needed to be accountable to myself. It's like, I didn't need to be picking those things up by myself. And, part of my old pattern is to be kind of, very overly independent and I can take care of myself. I don't need anybody's help. That's one of my patterns with my codependence and, that it makes it hard for me to ask for help. I needed to ask for help in those areas. So that was an area just recently that I had to practice my 10th step, you know, and make amends to myself for pushing my body. You know, I'm 66 years old and sometimes I think my body is still at the same strength as, you know, in my 40s or my 30s and it's not. And so I have to be aware of those things and be gentle with myself and take care of myself. So, that self-parenting helps me work this step. You know, the one, part of this step that it says, you know, with the word promptly, that is so important. So sometimes there can be, at least with, you know, in the past with my codependence, if I did do something that I needed to go make amends about, I would work it 10 ways in my head of how it was going to go, what I would say, what they're going to say. You know, I'd go into this whole storyline inside, and then a day would go by, and then a week would go by, and then a month would go by, and then it's like, okay, how do I go back and make amends to that person, you know, about something that I needed to have made amends way back at the time that it happened. And so out of that, trying to make things perfect, even in my amends, procrastination sets in. And I was always told that perfectionism and procrastination are two sides of the same coin, that I will procrastinate until I can do it perfectly. And I know I'm not going to be able to do it perfectly. And so I'll procrastinate. And then the cycle goes on and on and on and on with that. Ken had mentioned, you know, during the questions, there were some questions around boundaries because I think also our step 10 plays a big part with knowing what my boundaries are. I found it really helpful to identify my boundaries in those five areas, physically, emotionally, sexually, spiritually, and intellectually, and to sit down and write down just simply what was okay and not okay for me to experience in those areas. It gave me a template to start working with in that. I saw in the chat room there, you know, we had forgotten about, but there is a pamphlet on establishing healthy boundaries, as well as in the Code of Blue book and the commonly asked questions in Chapter 5, there's a section in there on boundaries. But for me, again, you know, my boundaries have to do with my self-parent in action. So if I have this loving, empowered, spiritually connected self-parent, then I am going to promptly admit when I make a mistake, promptly admit when I have maybe said something that wasn't okay or did something that wasn't okay, acknowledging again the humility of my humanness without going into the humiliation of the toxic shame that came out of the trauma from my childhood. Again, that place for me in amends making where I can go into just like, oh, so I'm going to play act like if I was talking to one of the kids and coming from shame, it's like, oh my gosh, you know I'm the worst parent in the world and I made some mistakes. I'm sorry. I know I screwed up your lives. You know, that's all toxic shame stuff. Doesn't do any good, as opposed to being really accountable and responsible for who I am and speak clearly about my mistakes that I made and even any current mistakes that I made. Shaming ourselves does no good. It just keeps us stuck in our disease, where our humbleness and humility of being able to acknowledge when I've made a mistake, that keeps me empowered and strong. And so part of with having healthy boundaries is if I have healthy boundaries, I'm going to recognize your boundaries. If I don't have healthy boundaries physically, and so anybody can come up and touch me and, you know, get close to me and talk to me, you know, too close in my space and all that kind of stuff, I'm not going to recognize that, and I'll probably cross over your boundaries. If I don't have healthy sexual boundaries, you know, which I didn't, you know, for a long period in my life till I got into recovery, then I'm not going to recognize your sexual boundaries. You know, if I don't have healthy emotional boundaries, I'm not going to recognize yours. If I don't have healthy intellectual boundaries, which has to do with my reality, and for me, it has to do with my reality. It has to do with the way I think, my beliefs, my philosophies. And so, you know, I mean, right now there's, at least in the U.S., there's a lot of political stuff going on and social media and all this, lots and lots of stuff going on. If I don't have healthy intellectual boundaries to know that I have a right to my beliefs, I have a right to see things the way I see things and approach my life with my own personal values, I will recognize your boundaries intellectually, and I will not tell you how to think and be. And I think that is so important in this day and age. So what I want to do is open up for questions and see if see what you have to say on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Karen USA has had her hand up for a question. If you could unmute.
Hi. Hi, y'all. You guys are doing a fabulous job. Thank you, everyone, for your service. And question is that this Dakota seems to really closely mirror Al-Anon. Am I missing something here?
So part of, so looking back when, with codependence. So Al-Anon focuses mainly on relation, you know, there's definitely similarities, but mainly relationships that has to do with people who are dealing with somebody with a chemical addiction issue, primarily alcohol, but drugs and alcohol in that as well. Nar-Anon is the same way. Programs like COSA, Co-Sex Addicts Anonymous, they're dealing with an aspect of a relationship that has to do with being a relationship with a sex addict. So they're like pieces of the pie. I don't know how else to say that. And so what codependence, because there's no one way to be codependent, it's fear driven. And so it can show up in literally hundreds of ways. There's no one way to be codependent. Somebody can be a caretaker or an enabler, controller, all of that, as well as somebody can be on that opposite end and that they're going to avoid everybody. They're going to, not be involved with people's lives at all. They'll isolate. That's also codependence. And so, are there some similarities there? Yes, but, it's, Al-Anon is a piece of the pie, around codependence. I think that's the best way I could explain that.
Okay, great. Thank you. Nancy C., you're next up on our question. Nancy C., are you unable to mute yourself? Okay, we're going to move on to, is it pronounced Wei, W-E-I? Is that Wei?
Yes, it's Wei. Hi. Sorry, I'm going to on my video. Hi, my name is Wei.
Hello.
I'm so glad I'm from Montreal, Canada. I'm so thankful for this meeting. I am literally new to CODA. Literally new. Because I joined AA like 3 months ago. And
very good.
And through getting sober, I realized that my main issue is codependency. So that's why people told me about CODA. So I started coming to see, you know, and I love everything that I've been hearing. Really, I can relate so well. Thank you everyone for the service and also the, I love the speaker. Thank you, Mary and Ken. So I'm going to jump right into my question. I have two questions. One part is for step 8 and 9. I hope that's okay because I heard Ken mentions that, hope. He said, I need to be careful to have hope because hope could also bring to resentment, fear and expectation. Because I thought that, because when I joined AA, it's always like, hey, you need to be hopeful. It's good to have hope. Because when I have no hope, I cannot live, you know, I just want to die. So hope is like, okay, I have the hope to get better. So I don't understand why hope, it will be expectation and resentment. That's my first question. And my second question is, you mentioned about isolation is also called dependency. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that.
Okay. So the hope is, you know, and I think Kim was saying this, hope is a good thing, but sometimes hope can be disguised. We can use hope where it's really expectations that we're developing and so it's not about an open-ended hope, you know, where our higher power is in charge. When we take and utilize hope as a way to, you know, well, I hope that you're going to hear me. You know, there's an expectation in that, you know. So, or I hope that you'll see it my way. There's an expect, you know, and so being aware of what are we really meaning when we say hope. But of course, hope is an important aspect that we have with our higher power. So on the other question, with isolation being part of codependence, again, you know, my understanding with codependence and how I've come to experience it is as a fear addiction. And primarily, I'm afraid of that toxic shame repeating in my life. So I can isolate so I don't run into areas where I might feel that toxic shame. I can try to control people so maybe I don't feel that toxic shame. I can be a caretaker so I don't feel that toxic shame. I can, you know, I can do all these different things. I can, you know, fantasize about relationships and go from one relationship to the next, to the next, to the next. So, you know, I don't feel out of the fear of feeling that toxic shame. And so isolation is just one aspect of it that, you know, I can do my life on my own. I don't need any help. I don't need anybody. And so, you know, I'm just going to kind of take a step back from life and not be involved with people. But you look at the underlying message that's underneath there. Usually there's fear of getting hurt, fear of not being enough, fear of being harmed in somehow, fear of being made fun of, can be a number of things. So I hope that's helpful. We're going to move on. Thank you so much and welcome to the program. And we're going to move on to step 11 with Ken. Thank you, everyone. I did something and so it's over here now.
Hello, everyone. I thank you for hanging in there with us. This is makes for a long day, but we only have these two steps to go, and then we'll also open up some time for more questions as well. Excuse me. step 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. I'm going to read just a quick excerpt from the Coda book on that as well. Step 11 guides us as we grow and evolve in our spiritual program. Remembering that codependence is a spiritual dilemma. It is crucial to our recovery. This is our codependent behavior. Through our codependent behaviors, we made people, places, and things our gods, giving them importance and power. To avoid the possibility of returning to our former codependent ways, we must ensure a greater relationship with our higher power on a daily basis. By the time we reach step 11, many of us have learned or reaffirmed that we are not alone. We may never have experienced a relationship with God, or we may have avoided our higher power through our codependence, but God has always been there for us. This step, like a few of the others, is really in two parts that we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, and as well, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about meditation. And I have found that I'm one who will go through periods of time where I'm meditating a lot, and then I'll get distracted, and slowly but surely I'll kind of pull away, and then I'll meditate a lot, and then I'll pull away. But meditation is, for me, a great way to slow my thoughts down and to, you know, ideally my goal is to just stop thinking and be a human being in the moment, which is where I find a connection, the richest connection with my higher power. It's beyond words. And I know that I've seen workshops and, you know, 101 ways to meditate, et cetera. And I just encourage people to seek, try various types of meditation. Open eyes meditation, closed eyes meditation, candle meditation, music meditation. I know someone who floats and meditates by floating in a salt chamber. some with music, some with a massage chair. It's like whatever we can do to slow our body down and our mind down, and help us to focus on, for me, it's important to focus on one word. I had a dear friend who owns a retreat center up in Northern Arizona that we've done lots of retreats at. And she would say that, you know, mantras are simply ways of distracting the conscious mind so the rest of our body can meditate. And I really like that, to be honest with you. So I usually will focus on a word, sometimes love, maybe a vision of a candle, just my breath. But it helps me slow my body down. It allows my nervous system to rest, and it allows me to sense the presence of my higher power with me and the oneness that I have with my higher power. It works very well for me, but it took a while for me to learn to do it and then to trust it and just let go. But I do believe it's how, you know, one of the richest ways for me to experience a connection with my higher power. Prayer is another thing. I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but because it can sound a little bit arrogant. I don't mean it that way. It wasn't intended that way. But a while back, actually a long time ago, actually before CODA, but I was in, recovery, is I found myself getting bored in my prayers with my higher power. And what I recognized was that all I was praying was rote prayer. And then I had this vision of billions of people praying rote prayer to a higher power. And I was like, it's like my higher power going, oh, come on, can't you just tell me a little bit about you? What's going on with your heart? How's your day? Something beyond the rote prayers, you know, that I was boring my higher power. And I don't, if I had the power to bore my higher power, I probably need to change my higher power. But it made clear sense to me that I was doing intellectual mechanical prayers that weren't manifesting from my heart and my connection with my higher power. And so I started doing daily conversations with my higher power. And I was sharing that with somebody at one point, and they said, I said, I really wish that I could hear my higher power's answers and a clear conversation with my higher power. So he said, well, gave me a suggestion. He said, this works for me. Try imagining God's answer to a question or a comment to something you just said. And somehow that resonated so powerfully in my heart, I almost brought tears to my eyes, because I do believe that imagination is that part of our brain that imagination comes from, which is different than the part of our brain where fantasy comes from. Fantasy is human created, and I believe that imagination is more in line, opens a portal in my mind to higher knowledge, and we call it the higher self now. And it's a doorway to greater spiritual connection. And so when I'm meditating, I try to open that doorway as well. But I also try to open that doorway through just being conscious of it and having a conversation through that doorway. And then imagine my higher power's answers. And then he had also said, then if the answer that you imagine rings true to your heart, trust it. And that made such clear sense to me, because my heart always knows and will never lie to me. So my prayers over the years have become more along the lines of, you know, conversations with my higher power throughout the day, that my higher power is never not with me, which is to say my higher power is always with me. And I get distracted, but when I remember, oh yeah, my higher power, and my higher power never left, never went anywhere. I went somewhere for a little while. It took a while, but after a while I began to hear this voice, and I was going, conversations, and my higher power was responding with answers, and it wasn't imagined answers. They were just coming cleanly and clearly. As a matter of fact, none of us would probably be talking today if I hadn't paid attention to that very thing. At that time, just before CODA started, I used to drive an hour and 20 minutes outside of Phoenix to a very small community where I was a director of treatment for a treatment program. So I had an hour and 20 minutes one way, or basically 2 hours and 40 minutes a day in the car. So through a summer before CODA started, I'd listen to music, or I'd just shut it all off. And sometimes, you know, with 70 patients and 23 clinicians and a crazy staff, I was pretty overwhelmed. And that hour and 20 minute drive really gave me a chance to let go of everything. And one late afternoon, I heard my higher powers voice, Ken. I've been struggling with the issue of the fact that we were paying our therapist basically to be our CODA sponsor, because there was no program. And we didn't know where to go. I tried sharing in AA meetings, and my sponsor would come up to me and go, we don't talk about those things in this program. You should probably talk to a therapist. And rightfully so. AA wasn't designed for that. And I was sending people home all over the country who were there, who had been treated for codependence, and they had no place to go for support. And so I said, we'll go to Al-Anon and ACA, and well, I'm not an adult child and alcoholic. I said, well, it doesn't matter. Just go get the program. Go get the steps. Work. Go. Don't tell them. Just go to those programs. And I would get calls from people who inadvertently had mentioned that they were a codependent in an Al-Anon meeting. And some folks after that meeting told them, we're not a program to help you with your codependence, so don't come back. So I was really deeply troubled by the fact that there was no place for us to go. So I kind of struggled with that on my way back from work in the day. And one afternoon I heard this voice say, Ken, start a meeting. Now, clearly from my higher power. And so for about, well, and that what that triggered was my fear responses. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, that's for people like, oh, you know, Bill W. and Dr. Bob, all of those people, you know, and I'd let it go. And the next night I'd hear, Ken, just start a meeting. No, I can't do that. I mean, what are they going to think? I mean, you know, I could hear my sponsor going, well, who the hell do you think you are? So I had these fears of judgment come up. I had these fears of loss and abandonment, many of which actually happened. But so for 2.5 months, this went on back and forth, and I debated with my higher power about starting a meeting. And finally I said, okay, I'll talk to Mary. So being a good codependent, I want to go talk to Mary, because if she was okay with it, then maybe we could do it. And she was delighted with it. And so were some other people who we talked to who were willing to help us do various pieces of getting that first meeting started. And so CODA came through that dialogue with my higher power in a car out in the middle of the desert for 2.5 months in an argument between God and fear, my fear. But I trust that. And so I take when I'm struggling with, for example, an answer, to when I'm seeking, you know, God's answer about something within in my life, a situation or a circumstance, the answer will almost always come to me through some form of inspiration, insight, intuition, or instinct. I call them the four N's. My intellectual mind does not understand them. My heart does, because inspiration, insight, intuition, instinct are languages and experiences of the heart, not the intellectual mind. Just like the intellectual mind doesn't understand feelings. It can't tell you how it feels. Something just popped up to get my attention and I got distracted. So it will almost always come in some form of of those, one or more of those experiences of inspiration, insight, intuition, or instinct. And I know that that's clearly from God's will for me. And if it doesn't, then I'll pray and meditate. Then if I'm still not sure about God's will in a situation, I'll go talk to my recovery community and my support, my friends. We have a lot of people that we co-sponsor with because we've been doing this for 30-some years together. So we reach out to them a lot. They reach out to us a lot. And if I'm still not sure and I'm not getting a clear answer, you know, I really ask my higher power to speak to me through them. And then if I'm still not getting an answer, you know, as someone reminded me of way back when, and still I remember today, is that no is also an answer. So if I'm not getting any response, it's not time to get an answer. And I've learned to truly trust that. So, you know, sometimes I may not understand or like God's will for me and for others in my life. Like, I didn't get it when I was angry when our son passed away from cancer a while back. And I had a few words for God, and then it didn't take very long before I got it. I may not understand God's will in his life, but it was his life. And that I needed to come to terms with it and come to acceptance and recognize my higher power's will may be far beyond what I can understand right now. My job is to accept and lovingly allow that to just be, because that's where my peace is going to come from. And when I could do that and trust that, then I really began to experience a sense of peace in response to the possibility that he could die from cancer. It helped a great deal. Last two things I want to mention really quickly is that God's will never has failed me. Not once. Not one time. And Mary's over there giving me signs like she wants to cut my head off. I mean, she's actually doing it. And the last thing is that I had to look at how much time do I put in my relationship with Mary on any given day. Well, I may put on an average day in the middle of the week, I may put 2 or 3 hours into my relationship with Mary, maybe 45 minutes, an hour in the morning and a couple hours in the evening. How much did I put into my friendships, into my friends? You know, well, you know, that varied depending on who it was, but I put time and attention into those relationships pretty consistently. So I'm one that believes wholeheartedly that we will get out of a relationship whatever we put into it. So then I had to ask myself, how much time do I put into my relationship with my higher power? Well, 10 or 15 minutes in the morning, maybe, you know, a quick prayer while I'm taking a shower, a few comments before I go to sleep, you know, and, you know, prayers of gratitude before I go to sleep and let it go. So basically, if I only put in maybe 20 minutes into my relationship with my higher power, that's all I'm going to get out of it. So if I really want a rich relationship with my higher power, I better put some time, effort, and energy on a daily basis into my relationship with my higher power. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to be frustrated and feel that I, you know, I'm not too connected with God. And actually, that's a good symptom for me when I'm missing my connection with my higher power that I haven't been following through lately, is I feel the disconnect. And so I will use that as a way to get back to prayer, get back to meditation, and recognize I have a moment-by-moment relationship with a higher power, and it's my job to nurture that relationship, or I'm only going to get out of it what I put into it. So with that, I'm going to close here, and I think open up for one or two questions, anyone?
One quick question, and then we'll have questions at the end.
Yes.
Jane from Exeter, UK, do you want to ask your question?
Hi, now, yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. I think I missed asking a question earlier, but also can be connected. Yeah, step 7, 8, 9. Yes, I'm asking about questions. How do I help my son? I know if my help, I'm kind of trying to, I know my health, relationship with God. If I'm getting healthy, then I can help my toddler son. But lately I'm struggling. My son has doing some behave that are based on the fear or shame that he experienced, because he was doing some self-harm. And I don't know whether he learned from his father, because his father was doing that, or he experienced when I acting out of my own pain, when he was misbehaving. So whether I shamed him, you know, then he feel he's bad, because he would say, I will ask him why you do that. And he said, I'm bad. I made you angry. Then also he would say, I'm bad. I'm hurting myself. So these were, I'm quite feeling vulnerable and feeling also shame that I'm in one or two cases. I remember I was very irritated and very angry. But in a normal daily basis, I also feel sometimes I can be very angry when he was really misbehave. So in a way, I also don't like my emotion of anger. And I don't know how to help my toddler when I'm still also feeling of my anger emotions.
I understand the dynamics that you're talking about. How old is your son?
He's 4.
Okay. He may be acting out the emotional energy in the family system. I don't know that, but I'd truly recommend that you would reach out to a therapist and talk with them. Especially a therapist who knows and understands codependent dynamics, because they would be able to help you right off the bat. I do believe that as a parent, an active parent, that the greatest gift we can give our children is our recovery. That as we change, my belief has been, and I've seen this and I've experienced this in my life, is that as I change, my children changed. They responded to me differently.
Yes.
And my recovery, you know, but all of them, they changed dramatically in response to me. And they didn't even realize that that's what they were doing. But if, you know, if he's got some consistent patterns going on, I would really recommend that you reach out to child therapist, child psychologist, and or a family therapist, and talk with them about what's going on. But especially, I would interview them and make sure they understand that they treat codependence.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're clearly working a codependence recovery program. It's okay to seek help outside the program.
Yeah, I did reach out and they haven't reached me yet. So
okay.
I will see. Yeah, maybe they will do. But just as my recovery in this journey, I only been 2 months in CODA, in other program, 9 months. So I left my husband a year ago. So I just want to know, I need to move on. I need to, be more healthy and more connected with God, with in loving myself first. And then, because my host, core center is, I don't know how to love him unconditionally when he is misbehaved, when he is just, it's my kind of rooted as a achievement kind of love from my parents. So it's just, I want to love him unconditionally, but I don't have that capacity yet, I think.
A good therapist will give you skills and tools and boundaries. And boundaries with our children is sometimes not easy. There were times when I wanted to take my little ones and put a coat hanger in the back of their shirt, hang them up in a closet, and close the door, because it was just too intense and too much. And I don't mean that in an abusive way. I mean that in a playful way. But, and so reaching out to professionals who can be of support to you, I think will help a lot. Looking for really, there's excellent books on parenting skills and parenting boundaries. And there's resources out there that I think will be really helpful. Plus, there's a lot of recovery people. Actually, there's a lot of people from UK in this meeting right now. They might be good resources for you as well. So I've got to move on, and Mary's going to take some time to talk with you about step 12, and then we'll open up after the meeting for about four questions and answers as well. So, you get on? Okay.
Hello. I've really enjoyed hearing all the questions. I've been sitting over away from the screen and hearing everybody's questions come in. It's just been delightful. And the questions that I've received as well. Thank you. Step 12. Each of us experiences spiritual awakenings by completing the first 11 steps. Some of us call it change in progress. Each step of the way, the spiritual doors of our being open more, and we experience a conscious awakening and greater awareness of God, our own spirit, and spiritual nature. In the process of enlightenment, illuminating the greater truths of life, God, and God's way. As a result, we become more consciously aware of ourselves and the physical life in which we live. We see God and our spiritual way of life with all its dimensions through new and different eyes. We understand living, codependence, and recovery with greater spiritual depth and wisdom. Throughout our recovery, God has continued to touch our lives through others. We have received a great gift. If we want to keep what we have been given, we must be willing to let go and give it away. We are a vessel for God's love and healing energy. We must try to pour out our gift of recovery and pass it on to others. We become the message, the experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Through our own enlightenment, we become God's light, a beacon for those who still suffer. We carry our message to other codependents in many ways. First and foremost, we do so through the attraction that we provide by practicing these principles in all our affairs. As we continue to give to others what God has given to us, we continue to receive greater gifts. Our recovery becomes an exciting and rewarding journey of spiritual fulfillment. Through God's abundant love, the spiritual principles of our program, and our willingness to be rigorously, I can never pronounce that, honest in continuing our recovery to the best of our abilities, we will come to know a new sense of belonging. We will begin to trust and believe in ourselves and that the healing of our past is possible. We'll no longer be controlled by fear and shame. We'll find we are able to respond to life's challenges with courage, integrity, and dignity. Others will no longer be our gods. We will experience a new love and acceptance of ourselves and others. We will become capable of developing and maintaining healthy and loving relationships, and we will learn to see ourselves as equal to others. We will learn that it's possible for our families to mend and become more loving and intimate. We will come to know that we are each a unique creation of a loving higher power, born with beauty, value, and worth. And we will progressively experience spiritual strength and serenity in our daily lives. So the 12th step for me, I see it in those three components, you know, the first being that, you know, the first statement in there, having had a spiritual awakening. because I've always have been taught and have viewed my codependence as a conflict in God's, that the more that my codependence, that I was in recovery from my codependence and practicing different behaviors and healing my trauma from my childhood history and dealing with the fear and the shame that came out of that, the more I did that, the more I went through, you know, looking at and working all 12 steps, that by the time all of that happened, I was getting right with my higher power. I was getting right with myself, and I was getting right with others. And to me, that was my spiritual awakening. And it has been a continually increasing process throughout my recovery. The way that I consider myself more spiritually awakened today, I couldn't even envision in those early days of recovery. It has been a process of working these steps, and the steps are the answers. And the steps always are the answers, and that is the core, the main substance of our program, is working these steps. Because of that, then, you know, the second, you know, the middle part of the 12th step, where, you know, we tried to carry this message to other codependents. You know, I've always been taught that this is a program of attraction, not promotion. And so by me changing, by me approaching people differently, acting differently with people, that was one way that I was able to carry that message. Obviously, by doing service work, sponsorship, being willing to do presentations like this, you know, the work that we did early on with establishing CODA and writing the Blue Book and all of that, it was a way to carry the message, you know, that was part of my life, mine and Ken's life, and that. But it was definitely something that is important. And so I, you know, service work is still so very vital to me in my recovery. Because again, you know, I believe I need to be able to give it away in order to keep it. And what's so interesting, because in the early days with CODA, so we had definitely in the first, you know, looking at the first 4 to 5 years of CODA, CODA went through that new beautiful baby that was born, and people, you know, when we had the first conference, it wasn't even, you know, that we invited people from all over the country that could just show up, and so we could get the beginnings of CODA, you know, set up in a similar organizational way as what Alcoholics Anonymous did. There was like this beautiful new baby, you know, and so there was lots of excitement. It was spiritually amazing and powerful. And then year two happened, and just like with a child, the temper tantrum started. So year two and three, there was a lot of power struggles, and everybody's codependence showed up, you know, and all that kind of stuff. It was very interesting to watch that over time, and even as an organization, how we developed in that. And how we, through that development, challenged ourselves. I learned more about myself in service work, you know, because I was really protective of CODA and didn't want anybody hurting CODA, and, you know, this mama bear kind of thing. And I had to let go, you know, take a step back. It's like, God's in charge, I'm not. I learned so much about myself in service work, and so I'm always encouraging people to find a way to be of service. I think it is so important. So the last part of this step is practicing these principles in all of our affairs. So, you know, I've heard Ken say this over and over again. It's like we get to step 12, and then we look at the next thing we're powerless over, and it takes us right back to step one. You know, so, you know, if I am practicing these principles in all of my affairs, then I'm not only just practicing that in my individual life or in my life with Ken or a family, but I'm also practicing that when I go to my office. I'm also practicing that when I'm at the grocery store. I'm also practicing that when I'm at the gas station or when I'm on social media. You know, I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs. And so I'm either going to do this recovery or I'm not. And it's important for me to continue that practice. Again, progress, not perfection in it. But if I don't do that for myself, then what I'm doing is harming me every time that I don't practice these principles. I love this program, and I absolutely, as I said, believe that the mainstay of the program is these 12 steps, and the gifts that we get out of that, is so important. It has been a powerful experience for me over time. And, you know, I got clean and sober in 1982, and then I started my codependence recovery in 1984. And it was so important for me to be able to, one, stay sober and stay clean, but then to have the relationships that I wanted to have in my life. And they're not perfect, but they are so amazing, just so amazing. And I love you all. And I'm going to open this up to a few questions on the 12 step, this step, and then we'll get into doing some questions and answers.
Mary, I have people in the queue, and I can't tell you what step they're asking their question on.
Okay.
Their question. So
that's
I was trying to do an order. Some of them have been waiting quite a while.
Sure.
The next one up is Julia W. from Wyoming. Can you unmute, Julia?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now.
Thank you so much. Thank you for this workshop and for founding this program. And I have so many questions that came up during the workshop. And the one most present for me in the moment is working on the concept of a loving higher power. And sorry, I'm having a lot of physical pain, so I'm a bit distracted. Mm-hmm.
Take your time.
I think that I spent some years in this program, and then I had an illness that affected my body and brain for many years, mm-hmm. and was not able to be in it. And so I'm kind of a newcomer again, and coming back to a program and thinking about higher power. It's always been hard to identify with higher power as like a person or, you know, a specific entity. And I'm sorry, I'm having a lot of pain, and I think I'm not really able to form my thought very well. So
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you asking in that with the changes that have happened with your body, are you having difficulties then connecting with a sense of a higher power?
I you know, with my illness, I was, it affected my brain so much and neurologically. I lost a lot and I was, you know, I couldn't even mentally, get dressed, follow the process of getting dressed by myself. So, I feel like everything kind of reverted, back to survival. And coming, you know, like trying to come to, having experienced religious abuse as a child and, having a God who was harmful, and, experiencing other, kinds of hurts. It has been really challenging from the beginning to, you know, it's kind of like, okay, a power greater than myself, you know, but am I making up this power? It's hard to like believe in that. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, I can share with you for different reasons. Obviously, and I'm so sorry for your illness. I pray you're going to be surrounded with grace around that. But I, like I said, for different reasons, I had challenges around that, around how do I have a concept of a higher power that is loving and caring and one that I can really work with, you know, believe in. And I started out with believing that my higher power was pure love. And so in that, I could wrap my head around surrendering to love and praying to love and seeing my higher power in that way. And that helped me. It helped me keep out of making it too complicated so I could keep it simple. I'm much better if I can keep things simplistic in my life. And I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that was something that I found helpful for me just in the way that I needed to start approaching a concept of a higher power.
Thank you, and thanks for your patience with my question.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I think what I'll do is bring Ken over for this last part for the questions. Is that good? Okay. And then we can, because if there's some in the queue, they could be questions on various things. And here's Ken.
I've got a question in the text. Paula from Indio, California.
Hello. I just wanted to first, Ken and Mary, I've been in program for about 9 years. Never heard you guys speak, and I must say that the clarity of hearing the steps come out of your words is really refreshing.
Okay.
So I wanted to thank you for all the work that you guys have done to create this program. And I know it's many others as well, but
yes,
appreciate that. The one thing I wanted to sort of comment on, I have two questions, and one thing I wanted to comment on was, I think the hardest part for me, I came directly into CODA, and the hard part was this concept of recovering, never recovered, and how to acknowledge my improvement as compared to being in a program like AA, which is simply not drinking. And that's been one that I've always struggled with. That's not a question, just kind of a statement that seems to always nag at me of like, because I'm always self-evaluating, right? I'm always self-evaluating, my inner child. My question is, you had said there was, four types of abuse. That was question one. I missed what those were. And then the second piece was relative to step 12. Which was, I get involved in the intergroup, and service work is always very difficult in CODA, because there's this trade-off of, well, I'm always doing things for all these other people, which is more on the caretaking, than the caregiving. And how do you balance I always seem to struggle to figure out how to communicate that message of what service work, about doing service work. I mean, I do service work, but I'm sort of curious for others how you communicate that message cleanly. So the abuse and the service work, if you would.
The abuse is the four areas where we experience mistreatments in childhood. We used to say that it was just abuse, and we always, kind of equated abuse to extreme types of physical mistreatment or sexual abuse or physical beatings or et cetera. But, we've recognized over the last 30 years that, abuse exists in four different areas. One is abuse, and that's usually physical or sexual in nature. One is abandonment, which is various degrees and experiences. We know today children can be abandoned, but adults can't. We have a choice about whether we're going to be in a relationship or not. And if somebody's going to abandon me or abandon the relationship, then I can deal with that effectively, ideally. But a child has no choice. And so abandonment, as I had said earlier, is something all the way from absolute leaving a relationship to being in the relationship, present but unavailable. And it's one of the most common forms of and extreme forms of emotional starvation. We can't get anything from a caregiver. And so we're literally starving. And the third is an enmeshment, which literally means entanglement. It's where my energy and somebody else's is all entangled with each other. And I don't know where you end and I begin and when I end. And we're one and we're going to... Mary, I start to do that. She goes, she cringes. Like, oh, my God, give me some boundaries. Abuse, abandonment, enmeshment, and neglect. And neglect is very subtle. It's like the very often it's like emotional neglect means they neglected. It's not as though parents woke up one morning and said, how am I going to emotionally neglect my kids? They're just doing what they were trained to do. And so emotional neglect means that they neglect to show up for me and teach me about seven primary feelings and teach me about boundaries and emotional boundaries and how to have a language for my feelings and how to appropriately express those feelings given certain environments. And that my feelings were okay. They're what make me human. If I take my feelings out of my humanness, then I'm just an android, which I tried to be at one point for a while. Didn't work very well. But if they neglected to teach me those things, then it's considered emotional neglect. If they neglected to teach me about sexual boundaries, sexual preferences, sexual ideas, how to negotiate and talk about our sexual desires in a relationship, what's okay, what's not acceptable. We get safe sex type education in school systems, but very few of us really had an education on what healthy sex is all about and what does a healthy sexual relationship look like. So if that's true, then we grow up sexually neglected and we learn sex off the streets or from groups of people who really don't know any more about it than we do. And so neglect can exist across the board. Emotional neglect, physical, means that they neglected to take care of my health, my well-being, buy me new clothes or shoes or whatever I might need. They neglected to take care of my dental care, anything having to do with my physical well-being and environment. Spiritual, they didn't teach me that I'm a spiritual being, although we may practice a religious practice, but I'm also spiritual in nature. So then I would grow up experiencing spiritual neglect, which I did, actually. And I appreciate it today because I didn't have to unlearn a religious process. And I could it was easier to create one for myself.
Logic. That
others experience profound religious abuse, you know. And so those four areas are really the areas of abuse that is important for us to take a look at. And then they exist in all five areas. Emotional, abuse, abandonment, enmeshment, neglect. Physical, abuse, abandonment, enmeshment, neglect. Sexual, and intellectual, and spiritual. So it's quite a package in a first step when I started looking at all of that in relationship to my childhood. What did I get and shouldn't have gotten? What didn't I get but needed to get?
Yeah, I had never heard the neglect. That was just new.
Yeah, did they neglect out of ignorance? I mean, a lot of times neglect is not intentional. It's just what your parents can give us what they were trained to experience. They brought their history into our relationship. And I think we're the end result of six prior generations. And I'll be glad to explain that at some point. But anyway. Any other question?
Service question.
It's a dilemma that's existed for the entire length of 12-step recovery period. I mean, conferences in AA used to have fist fights on the conference floor over one little pamphlet. and so how do you maintain healthy boundaries in a service environment? There's a great pamphlet. There's a service pamphlet that I think, I don't know if you've read it, but it can be helpful. I've encouraged people all the time that if you feel inclined, set up a service workshop and ask some people who have provided lots of service to come and be a part of that workshop and create a forum where people can ask those questions, talk about those experiences. And because we're a wealth of information, you know.
I guess my question was about attraction of it, primarily just trying to fill positions. I mean, when I look at our inner group, it's always difficult. And
I'd hunt people down.
Thank you. You will serve and you will like it.
No. Not really, but it is a dilemma that a lot of people struggle with, and not only in the U.S., but in the U.K. and lots of countries. We hear from a lot of people saying, how do we get more people to commit to service work? You know, and people who have said often, well, that seems really codependent to me. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, you really want to challenge your recovery and find out the quality of your recovery, start becoming involved in service work. It will help you grow like crazy.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you for your service.
Do we have time for one more question?
We can take more time.
Okay. Robin, if you can unmute yourself, I believe you have a question.
Hi there. Robin from Sarasota, Florida.
Hi, Robin.
I want to thank both of you. I just want to keep saying thanks. The pearls, the aha moments were incredible this entire time.
Oh, nice.
I really appreciate it. I did have a couple of questions. Maybe I'll just ask one at a time and see if we have more time. One of the questions that I had, I guess I'm going to direct to you, Ken. You know, there's that concept of failure to thrive as a baby if it's not touched or whatever. And that, you know, that can lead to extreme, you know, codependence because of that. So you bring up the concept of if I see myself as having a need, then I'm already in trouble. In other words, because then I have a reliance on other individuals to maybe and have an expectation that this should be provided. I look in the mirror and I tell myself about loving myself and the beautiful person that I am, but yeah. I do go back to the self-shaming and sometimes get back to the, oh, what an idiot, how stupid you are. But what was confusing to me was that you also said, but if I have a need, I can go out to my friends and say to them in my CODA group or my self, you know, hey, I need the hug. I need the, I need you to tell me today, you know, that I am a good person. So I don't get, so my question is this, I made the decision to get out of a relationship. I mean, I had been married for quite some time, for over 25 years, and then I was in a relationship for 10, and my therapist basically said to me, you know, if you can't stay out of a relationship for 1 or 2 years, I'm not going to be able to help you, because she saw my extreme codependence and my need to pay attention to me. Well, we're talking 6 years later, and so at this point in my life, I think to myself, there is the basic need for human companionship, the basic need for touch, the basic need. So I don't get what you said in being in trouble when I think there's still the basic need.
I don't know if you recall me saying so, but I was saying that children have natural desires. They're built into who we are as human beings. We have a desire for affection, attention, nurturing, closeness, care. And if I use the word need in those ways, I apologize because that wasn't my intent. They are truly natural desires, you know. And so, you know, how do I, today I'm not in a relationship, so how do I get some of my desires fulfilled? Do I have a support system of people I can let them know, saying I've been feeling lonely lately, and I could sure use a hug. Would you give me a hug? You know, I could sure use some affection. I know lots of recovering friendships, people in friendships who, you know, they don't hesitate to give one another a back rub or, you know, go getting a massage so that it fills that desire for physical connection. There's lots of ways to get those desires met in healthy ways. Need, when it becomes need, is when I can't say no. I need to have this to be okay. And my okayness is based on having this. And the truth is, we are okay. We may miss this, and we can take steps to fulfill those in healthy ways. Do we have a desire? We're at a point, I'm just hypothesizing here, do I have a desire now to start having a healthy companionship and relationship with somebody? So now that seems right to my heart, then I would follow through on taking those steps. But can I do it but maintain boundaries? Because once I attach need to it, I start developing a dependency. And so need usually implies dependency or compulsive behavior. I can't say no. I need this. You don't understand. I need this. Well, yeah, I do understand. You know, and so what? So is my, have my desires evolved to desperation and need? Then I'm in addiction and compulsive behavior. I'm in my codependence. I need you to make me okay.
So it's good to me, for me to know, because, you know, in the 6 years, it's been my choice. I have not looked to get on any website or it's my
good.
Choice.
Good.
But I do recognize I like the idea of companionship, and I didn't want it to mean that I did not have enough self-esteem to be able to be on my own. And that's what I was trying to understand.
I think you proved that you have plenty of self-esteem to be on your own. 6 years is a long time.
Yeah, it's been an unbelievably fabulous journey. So I highly
Isn't it
recommend
amazing?
It. Yeah, to anybody who's doing this. Okay, so may I ask one other question? Is that possible? I don't want to take up other time. So
sure.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. So and another one of the callers did touch on this, and so I have been very fortunate in my life to have continuously synchronicity of events occur. that so much so that I've started documenting them. Even my therapist have said they're a bit incredible. I think it's because of my awareness that a lot of people have these all the time. Everybody has them all the time. They don't pay attention to it. Mm-hmm. Even with all these synchronicity of events that are incredible and have put me in the flow and have shown me the way, I still have trouble believing. And Mary mentioned and touched on it, well, maybe starting with the concept of love. But what is the aha moment that I need to get over that hump of belief? And I've been in the program for 7 years, but I have been doing this kind of things since I've been 15, right? You know, even with the, you know, spiritual, knowing that there's an energy connection more than just this, right? There's something else. But I lose, and I am so left brain associated. My background is that, and I'm so intellectually motivated more than emotionally motivated. So the question I have is for the people and for myself, they're having that one trouble of getting over to that hump of belief. What is that about? Why is that a pullback? Why is that a stopping point?
So I'll speak to that. I guess what I would suggest, if you want a suggestion on that, but it is really looking at, you know, what are the fears that are there if you let go and trust in a higher power? It's like, what comes up? You know, what are you afraid of happening? You know, afraid of experiencing? Like, I would look at what's underneath the, you know, what's underneath that. I know for myself, I had to look at that and I was afraid that, you know, I knew how to survive. Even dysfunctionally, I knew how to survive with my own survival skills.
Me too.
You know, right. And so that was familiar to me. I could touch it, feel it, you know, all of that. The idea of trusting in a higher power to deal with some of those issues that were so scary for me was terrifying. And so it was like I, you know, that letting go a little bit at a time, but I had to look at all those fears that were underneath that, that were driving it, that drove me to hold on to playing my own God, in my life. And that helped. The more I saw that, the more I saw that it was just a trauma response. It was like, okay, this has nothing to do with my higher power. This has to do with my trauma. So then I was able to start separating out the two a little bit more, start looking at, okay, what does that look like then? I've got kind of similar, I've got all these signs over here that says God's involved in my life and showing up and, you know, wonderful things, but, you know, but I was still holding on and it was strictly my trauma. And so I had to talk with my little girl, my teenager, you know, it's like, okay, I'm going to parent you instead of letting you be in charge when it comes to my spirituality. I was able to self-parent in other areas, but I had held on to that area of letting my inner child be in charge of my relationship with God instead of my self-parent.
Oh, my freaking God, excuse me, but that is, oh my God, it's taken so long to get there, and that's exactly it. Thank you. Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have one quick thought, basically, was I when I started using love as my higher power, because to me, my higher power and love are one and the same, I would ask myself, what would love say? What would love do? And if I'm not willing to ask myself, what would love say and what would love do, then I need to look at what feeling is keeping me from asking. Almost every time was fear.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I follow up with another question regarding that?
Yes.
Yes.
My inner child does not believe in God. In fact, she feels totally abandoned by God. I mean, I've seen that. God was not there when she was all alone and you know, when the trauma happened. So I'm not sure how to bring her over, even though I have had proof in my life as an adult. It's like she forgets it. I forget it. You know, like, oh, it's not going to happen again that there is this benevolence in the universe. So did you have to deal with that?
You want to go first?
I'm pretty sure we both are going to comment on that. But this is just my instinct, so I'm going to respond mostly from instinct. One way to kind of circumvent this just is to sit down with your child and ask them that you and they together create a concept that they're willing to begin to trust, at least to begin with. You know, what would a higher power look like that they'll trust? Let them be a part of it, rather than you creating it and then try to get them to trust.
Thank you.
That was my thought.
So mine was more a little bit from the process that I went through because of the, some with the sexual abuse. It's like, okay, so how from a higher power? Why wasn't there intervention in that? And so part of what for myself that I came to was that, you know, my father, when he was sexually abusing me, was acting out of his own self-will, his own codependence, had nothing to do with God. And that I believe my higher power kept my little soul safe, for lack of a better way of saying that, kept me intact long enough to be able to do this work, but that the abuse that happened to me had nothing to do with God. That had to do with people playing God. And so that helped me to have some understanding that, you know, I was at some level kept safe during that. God gave me the ability to disassociate. And so, you know, that, you know, it's what combat vets do and, you know, when they're in combat, you know, it's how they survive that, you know, seeing all those horrors. That's how I survived experiencing the horrors I did, was I was able to disassociate. And thank God I could. Truly.
Thanks, Ken and Mary. This is Lisa. I think Tammy has some closing thoughts.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you so much, Ken and Mary, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. What gems. What a treasure. I will be poring over these and running them through my fingers for a long time. I've said it before, these patterns, characteristics, steps, and traditions are inspired, and they are a roadmap out of a dark country. Follow it. Thank you so much for the gift that truly keeps on giving. I want the behaviors on the right side of the column. I want and have seen the fulfillment of the promises. They are real. And no matter how many times I work the steps, each time has a new gift for me. Will I ever be done? No, it's a spiritual journey, onward and upward. And by the way, 2021 is the year of service, so keep that in mind. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a delight.
Thank you. Yes. And for all the work you all did
Absolutely.
To make this happen. Thank you so much.
The best.
Thank you. May we close with the 7-step prayer.
Okay. Thank you so much for this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful workshop.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lisa's pulling up our 7-step prayer.
I see it clearly on my screen, but I guess you guys don't have it yet.
I'm sorry. I think I've got my chat over it. Here we go. All right. If you'll mute yourself and join me. In this moment, I ask my higher power to remove all my shortcomings, relieving me of the burden of my past. In this moment, I place my hand in God's, trusting that the void I experience is being filled with my higher power's unconditional love for me and for those in my life. And let us have the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity, to accept the things,
I cannot change.
The courage to change, the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you're worth it.
You've
got to work it every day.
Thanks, Ken and Mary. Wonderful, beautiful workshop.
I'm so glad.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much, everybody. We love Dad Steps.
Love it. You guys are great.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Our founders, Ken and Mary, take us on a journey through the 12 steps, part 4, in progress.